Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to The Kathy Barnett Show on the number one talk radio station across most of the Mid-Atlantic states. You can hear me. You're listening on WPHT 1210. And today, I have some amazing interviews lined up for you. First, we're going to start off talking to the only senator who had the nerve to endorse me before everyone knew who I was in that 2022 race here in the state of Pennsylvania. And that is with Senator Joni Ernst. She is the senator of Iowa. I spent a lot of time in Iowa. And so we're going to start off talking with Senator Ernst, talking about the DOGE cuts, talking about Donald Trump's big, beautiful bill, what's in, what's out, and what's up with these Democrats. Then we're going to shift over to my conversation with Donald Trump's former Secretary of Labor, Alex Acosta. Now, we did not talk about that Epstein list on air, but I got some juicy stuff for y'all a little bit later. So hang on and let's get into it. Senator Joni Ernst from the great state of Iowa. Thank you so much for taking some time to speak with me.
Of course. It's great to be with you. Thanks,
Kathy. Yes, you are beloved in Iowa. I was working on the Vivek Ramaswamy presidential campaign, and I spent, 12 months there running all across your state. You are absolutely beloved. Now you're obviously in the Senate, but you're also leading the committee on the DOGE, on the Senate version of finding those particular cuts. You're doing that. Talk to us about that, because a lot of those offsets are going to be used to offset the bigger expense from the reconciliation budget, right?
Yes.
Talk us through a little bit of what you're looking at. How much do you think you can get from those particular DOGE cuts?
Absolutely. So right now, as chair of the Senate DOGE caucus, and I chair the Small Business Committee, all of our chairs are working together to go through their budgets line by line and see what within the federal government would be considered waste. Where can we eliminate programs that aren't working for the American people? How can we reinforce those that are? And with those savings, they will be able to balance out reconciliation. There are some other programs, of course, that are part of our discretionary spending, and we'll be doing what we call rescissions packages with the administration. That does have to start with President Trump. So what we're doing through our DOGE caucus, through our initiatives, working with DOGE at the federal level, working with the Office of Budget and Management, and finding those cost savings. And we'll put that together. We'll vote on that in the Senate and in the House. And overall, we're going to do a number of rescissions packages. I think the first one that's coming out from the administration is about $9 billion. So a very small, small one. But again, we're going to do iterations of rescissions packages that will help us with reconciliation.
Yeah, and as you're looking at the TCJA, I always have to talk. I want to say Trump cuts, but
that's
tax
what they
cuts. So, and when we're here at Job Creators Network, perhaps that bill is perhaps the most significant when it comes to our small businesses, which makes up almost 50% of our GDP, over 30 million small businesses, 90 million Americans who work for that.
Yes.
So this bill is so important, but you have a number of key provisions in there, right? You had a 20% pass-through, you have no tips on tax, no tips on overtime, full expensing of capital expenses. So as you're walking into this, you have a cap of $5.8 trillion that you can, but everything in is more like $10 trillion.
Right.
How do you prioritize as a senator, not only for what is going to be beneficial to small businesses, but come next year when the voters are going into the ballot box, that they feel the positive benefits enough that it works in our favor?
Absolutely. And Kathy, in the Senate, and I know they do this in the House as well, we are juggling all of these issues, which are a lot, and determining the priorities. What we have to do is look at it and say, what is the return on investment? Okay, how do we
help
Exactly. How do we help our taxpayers keep more of their own money in their own pocket?
Yes. So how do you prioritize those initiatives?
Yes. And that's what we're going to have to balance, because not only are we looking at that, we have to run a very efficient federal government. It still does require some funding, so we have to look at that. But we're also staring down a $36 trillion debt that this nation owns. And so we do have to sort through this. It's going to be a lot of number crunching in the end. So as you look at the initiatives that President Trump has been pushing out and what he talked about during his campaign, what can we do to help President Trump keep those promises to Americans, be able to fund the most important items in our federal government, but also help our taxpayers? We want them, as we're here with the Job Creators Network, we want them to create jobs. We want them to develop their small businesses. And so even outside of what we're doing in reconciliation, we're going to have to work on other legislation which helps our small businesses.
Yeah.
So right now, President Trump is working on bringing manufacturing back to America.
Huge.
Huge deal. So yesterday, Chairman Williams from the House and I introduced our legislation, the Made in America Manufacturing Finance Act, which allows greater capital access at no cost to the federal government to help our small businesses.
Well, that's going to be huge, because we're looking at 1 to 2 million jobs coming back into the country because of this reshoring. I don't know where we're going to get the people to work those jobs since we have a huge shortage, but that's going to be another problem down the road, I guess. Like, that's after this reconciliation bill. Three really quick questions. So Donald Trump has promised not to touch Social Security, but the reality is we only have so many big budgets we can take things from, right? Mm-hmm. So whether it's Medicare and Medicaid, whether it's Social Security, whether it's defense, we know we're not touching defense. He said we're not touching Social Security.
Right.
What are we doing with Medicare, Medicaid? Plus, do you think we're going to get Republicans to vote to repeal some of those green energy subsidies?
Right.
To find that money.
And I'll start with the last question, which is Democratic support. No, there will not be Democratic support. So, which is why the reconciliation is so important, because that's where we will get Republicans to support. We'll get Republicans to support, and we'll be able to pass it through the House and the Senate. But when you talk about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, those are things that we are very sensitive. We are very sensitive on those topics. I think about my own mother and father that are on Social Security. We think about those that are most vulnerable in our population.
Right.
So through DOGE, what we have discovered with Elon Musk going into Social Security is that if there are payments that are fraudulent that we shouldn't be doing, obviously we need to make sure that those aren't being made. You know, so half of the battle is just straightening out the systems to make sure that those that are supposed to be receiving Social Security payments are getting them. Those that should not be getting them should not be getting them.
Right.
So really streamlining the system, making sure that it is accurate.
So we're not touching it. So you're not thinking about touching it.
President Trump has said we will not touch Social Security. Medicaid is a different issue. And what we have seen, and I've witnessed this and have been working on this issue, is that the states actually have been making overpayments when it comes to Medicaid. So we need to correct that. And that's a state's deficiency. So we need to work with the states to make sure that we don't see payments that are, so there's a provider tax. So they are using that in a way that they should not be using it to support illegal migrants in the country. It's not what those payments from the federal government are supposed to do. So we do need to focus on issues like that. And I think that's where we can make a bit of a difference within Medicare and Medicaid, but Medicaid in particular.
That last question. Senator Booker, one of your colleagues, did a 12-hour sit-down. But I thought it was interesting because I was a little girl, but I still remember Newt Gingrich running down those exact same stairs with the contract for America, in his hand, right? So, and I just started thinking, like, just the symbolism of Senator Cory Booker sitting, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich running with a contract in his hand. Right. And I started thinking, Democrats are really lost.
They are.
They really have no messaging. Now, I'm on the outside looking in. You're on the inside. What do you see?
They are lost, Kathy. You're absolutely correct. So right now, the Democrats have no compass. And when they are arguing against ferreting out waste, fraud, and abuse,
you know they're the problem.
You know they are lost.
Yeah.
Okay, so most Americans, whether you are Democrat, Republican, or an independent, they would agree that if we are sending payments to fraudsters, it should stop.
Or to Gaza for condoms.
Yes, because that is a waste.
Yeah.
Okay, so they know they work hard for the money that they receive in a paycheck. And when the federal government is taking that money away and spending it on things that doesn't improve their life situation.
Yeah, that's a problem.
It's a problem.
And Democrats are fighting against it tooth and nail.
Yes,
why?
They are.
Why?
I can't comprehend.
But this is clearly good.
It is good. So all I can come back to is that because President Trump is spearheading these initiatives.
Yeah.
That's why they're fighting it.
I honestly believe he could walk on water and they would say, no, you didn't do it right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Senator, thank you so much
for your time.
I appreciate you.
Thank you.
She literally took a chance. She did not know me from Adam's apple. But when I was running for Senate in that 2022 race against several people, we will remain nameless right now, I called you.
Yep.
I introduced myself to you. I told you what my values were. And I asked you a question. Will you endorse me and support what I'm doing?
And what did I say?
You said, why not? Yes.
Yes, exactly.
And you did.
Thank you.
And that's not an easy thing.
Yeah.
So thank you very much,
Kathy. And for your service to our nation in uniform,
thank you. Well.
God bless you so much. And thanks for continuing on the fight for America.
Thank you, Senator. So awesome. I love it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for doing this.
Yes. We will continue with this special edition of the Kathy Barnett Show in a minute. See you on the other side.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
Okay, so we are back and we're going to continue with my interview. Alex Acosta, thank you so much, sir, for being here. The 27th Secretary of Labor Department under President Trump's first term. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
I'm really happy to be here.
Yes, I'm really excited to talk about these numbers you just put in front of me. We are at the Job Creators Network here in Savannah, Georgia. This is their second summit. So you're talking to those who represent more than 30 million small businesses who hire more than 90 million Americans. That represents almost 50% of our GDP. So these are very important people, and you just finished speaking with them, and you ran some numbers this morning. Walk us through that a little bit.
I did, and you know, I want to use this morning the new employment data came out, and great news, we exceeded expectations. The economy created almost 180,000 new jobs, and that's great. But you know, I wanted to use the labor data to talk about deregulation because the panel that we just finished is about the regulatory state and how it's really choking businesses, right? And we talk about removing billions in regulatory costs. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Like, how, I have no idea what billions in regulatory costs means to me and my family, and you know, and I know this stuff really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to talk about that in a different context.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at job creation last year, our economy created 1.5 million new jobs. Of those, 400,000 were government jobs. 900,000 is what I'll call government adjacent jobs. Mm-hmm. And by government adjacent, I mean healthcare services and education services, not the doctors and the nurses and the teachers, but the compliance folks, the folks to follow the insurance rules. I was talking to a woman that said she works at a hospital. New insurance rules came into place, and so they had to fire healthcare workers to hire more insurance compliance specialists,
wow.
right? So those are the government adjacent. And so 400,000 government, 900,000 government adjacent, only 200,000 what I'll call like jobs that make things for people or that make people healthier
right.
or teach people.
Right. So these are the private sector
These are the private sector jobs last year in President Biden's last term.
So let's just sum that up. So under the last year of President Biden's administration, we had 1.5 million jobs total.
Right.
1.3 million of those jobs were government-related jobs.
Correct.
And only 200,000 were private sector jobs.
And that's what deregulation means. Are we creating an economy of compliance specialists? Are we creating an economy of people that do things that make our life better?
Right, that builds things, which is what right. built America.
Which is what built America. And honestly, it's what makes my life better, my kids' lives better, right. and my community's life better,
right. right?
Now, let's talk about President Trump. Since he took office.
First 4 months,
our economy has already generated 200,000 true private sector jobs.
Compared to Biden creating 200 private sector jobs in an entire year. Donald Trump in four months.
Right?
Okay.
Here's where the jobs aren't being created. Instead of 400,000 government jobs, it's only 20,000 government jobs. Right? Because government is still increasing.
Not 200,000, but 20,000.
Not 400,000, but 20,000.
No, right. 400, so it's not even we cut it by half.
Right.
We've taken from 400,000 to 20,000. Okay.
Right. And so we're shifting from government jobs to the restaurants and, you know, and the foundries and the manufacturing facilities and also the service jobs, right?
Right.
The hotel jobs. Those are the jobs that we want right here in America. Those are the jobs that make our community better. We're not healthier because we have more folks filling out forms in hospitals. We're healthier when we have more nurses in hospitals.
Right.
We're not smarter when we have more administrators at schools. We're smarter. Kids are smarter when they have more teachers in schools.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fundamental difference between the Biden economy and the Trump economy.
Wow. How does that translate to individuals' wallets and how they're living their lives around the kitchen table? And lastly, how does that compete with what Democrats are selling with the hands-off, with the Tesla things, with Cory Booker sitting for 12 hours on a stoop? Like, how do you compare and how does it line up? How does it sync what we're experiencing from your numbers?
Right.
How people are living versus what Democrats are telling us.
Well, I think, you know, if we're being honest, that kind of depends. If you're a government worker, it doesn't line up well. But, you know,
that's a lot of people.
Do you want to take a guess how many? Well, I'll just tell you. We have 25 million government workers in the United States.
Okay.
About 1 out of 5 jobs in the U.S. works for the government. Now, just take a breath and think about that.
1 out of 5 jobs work for the government.
Right.
It's a lot of people.
It's time to rebalance that, right?
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of what you're seeing going on now is folks know someone that might lose their job. They might, you know, and so we're human beings and we're like, yeah, it's kind of tough. But you know what? It's time to rebalance. It really is. We're not better off as people. We're not better off as communities because our tax dollars are going to other people. We don't need 1 out of 5 folks working for the government. We need folks in the private sector
right.
participating in capitalism and in what makes America great.
Coming up with ideas on how to solve problems, right?
Right?
Yeah. What is the confidence behind these numbers? In Biden's last year, we have the entire year,
right.
200,000 privately owned jobs.
within 4 months on a Donald Trump, we have 200,000. Right. What is the sentiment? What's the confidence behind
that? So Bureau of Labor Statistics is part of the Department of Labor. I think they do a very good job. I think they're one of the premier agencies. I think they're one of the premier agencies in terms of keeping data. All that said, I'll be honest. I mean, they've come under criticism lately. They had a $600,000 job revision this past April. Mm-hmm. They overstated the 2024 job creation by 600,000.
That's a big mistake.
That's a big mistake. When you've got 1.5 million, that's a really big mistake.
That's a really big mistake.
Right, right. And so it wasn't 2 million, it was 1.5, you know. But they're very good. They really try to get it right.
Okay.
That's my view.
Okay.
But your listeners need to judge that for themselves because they had a big goof in 2024.
Right. But what is the confidence behind the private sector today, the businesses?
So these numbers are generated by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They will go out and they will survey businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And they will say, you know, have you hired? And it's one of the largest surveys
in
the country, if not the world. These numbers are considered the gold standard.
Right. And people just feel more comfortable, more confident that under the Trump administration there's future growth afoot. So people feel, I get it. So maybe the 200,000 wasn't really okay. But nonetheless, people obviously feel a little bit more comfortable. In fact, there was a survey I was looking at, a small business survey, where they asked a question. They were trying to sense how are small businesses feeling about these tariffs. And 48% of the respondents are more supportive of tariffs than they were even 2 months ago.
So I think the media is overhyping the tariffs. They're scaring people, and they're scaring people to death. And they're to death, and they're hurting the economy because they're scaring people so much. Let's take a step back and let's talk about tariffs.
Yeah.
You know, President Trump's position on this is real simple. It's called reciprocal tariffs. And he's not even doing 100% reciprocal.
No, he's
doing, you know, one for two. You put $2 of tariffs on our goods, I'm going to put $1 of tariffs on your goods. What is more fair than that, right?
Like especially for the left, who's always talking about equity and equality.
Right. I mean, you charge two extra dollars for American goods, I'm going to charge one extra dollar for your goods. That is more than fair,
right?
And you're going to see countries starting to come and bargain. But I also think we need to take a step back and talk about why these tariffs are going into place, right? And so after World War II, the world was devastated. And we were blessed as a country because the war did not happen on our soil. It happened on Europe's soil. It happened on Asia's soil.
Mm-hmm.
And those economies were devastated. And the United States, as a good member of the community, went out and said, we're going to help your countries. And we're going to help you regrow your economies. We're going to help Japan rebuild. We're going to help Germany rebuild. And we gave them a helping hand. And they rebuilt. And they are now, you know, our portion of the economy at that time of the world economy was massive. And it's been shrinking since as we've been helping all these other countries, you know,
build up
their place in the world. And we've been allowing them to tariff us. We've been supporting them with foreign aid. We've been subsidizing much of the world to be the good neighbor and help them build up. But at some point, that has to end.
Oh, my goodness. It's kind of making me a little, because I'm thinking, I'm going to let you continue. But as you're saying that, I'm angry to some extent because I've traveled the nation like you when I was with Vivek Ramaswamy and the presidential campaign, traveling all across the nation. There was so much despair. The roads and the dirtiness in some of our major cities, going to Philadelphia or New York, wonderful historic places, but you can see that there's a decline in the quality of life.
Right.
And so we've been exporting our wealth across the world.
We have, you know, and if Vivek was here, he would say, we need to tell the truth, right? You know, let's tell the truth. And the truth is, you know, we invited our neighbor into our house. We've been supporting our neighbor as a good neighbor does. But our house has gone into disrepair because we've been helping the neighbor build their homes. And now it's time to stop helping the neighbor because they've got big, beautiful homes. And now it's time to go and repair our own house.
Look at that.
Right? It's real, like if you think of a community, you know, your neighbor's house burns down, you help them build it up. But if they built it up, you know, really nice and it's fresh, now take the money and build your own home and renovate your own home.
It's time for them to go live in their own home. Instead of continuing to come to my refrigerator and go and raid my refrigerator.
And some will say that President Trump is being a little blunt about this. But honestly, the only way that they... Why should they stop taking our subsidies unless we're blunt enough to say, we don't want you to take our subsidies anymore?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're paying for someone, they'll keep taking your money as long as you're like, enough's enough, we're gone.
There are those people who are like that. We all have people in our family who are just like that, right? You know, I wish that foreign policy could be a thing of please and thank you. I say please, you say thank you, and we all live in this symbiotic relationship, all nice and happy. But Kevin O'Leary, he was testifying before, I believe it was Congress, and he said, China only understands the stick. They don't understand please and thank you. So you either show them the stick or you're going to continue what we've always had.
Well, you know, look, you're a small businesswoman. You run a business, you know, with the Job Creators Network. These are all small businesses. Businesses get it. In business, you know, it's not please and thank you. You negotiate and you negotiate a contract.
Okay.
And everyone is, you know, part of the system is people want to, you know, do what's best for them. And when did we decide that putting your business first or your family first, or your country first was a bad thing? That's the way it's supposed to work.
But why is it that some within our nation is creating, I believe, intentional divides as if they don't understand what we're saying? It seems very, as you're explaining it to me, and I'm sure to my audience as well, this is understandable. Who doesn't understand this? And yet, there's an element within our country that says, no, that's not good. We should continue to get to give.
It's common sense, and I you know, I can't explain it because I can't get behind their thinking. You know, part of me wonders how much of this is, it's in their self-interest. And so why do we have 25 million government workers? Is it possible that, you know, why did President Biden create, you know, its economy generate so many government and government adjacent jobs last year? Is it possible that in an election year, the best way, the easiest sugar fix to give people is, I'm going to create a whole bunch of government jobs so you're happy with me and you're beholden to me. And now you've got to vote to keep all those jobs, so you've got to vote Democrat, right? And I think sometimes the sugar fix is the easy approach, but those of us with kids know sometimes it's oh so tempting to say, you know, let's turn on the TV and you can have cake because we've got five other things going on.
Yes.
But that's not the right thing to do, even though we all do it.
Especially not long term, right? I was scrambling on my phone because I wanted to pull up this tweet by Representative Eric Swalwell, who said, Trump will cave on tariffs. If we push with everything we've got, we can make that coward cave. And I'm like, but by that coward, you mean America.
So why do we want to cave? Let me go back. You know, if you look at the big picture, after World War II, we did the right thing. We helped our neighbor. But it really is time for the United States to take care of its own house. The neighbor's houses have been built. Germany's economy is doing great. Japan's economy is doing great. China's economy is where it is because after World War II, we've helped them and we admitted them to the World Trade Organization and we did all these things for China. They're certainly doing great. So why do we keep helping them? Why are we okay with them putting more than $2 of tariffs for every one of ours?
Yeah. We will continue with this special edition of the Kathy Barnett Show in a minute. See you on the other side.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Hello, everyone. We are back with the Kathy Barnett Show on WPHT 1210. We're getting right back into these interviews.
More than $2 of tariffs for every one of ours.
Yes. And when you look at parity, I was reading a report, China's economy is actually bigger than our economy. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
I haven't seen that data, but...
But it certainly is a rival of ours.
It's certainly
and
a rival.
They have, I mean, you know, they sneeze, we all catch the flu.
Right.
They are the manufacturing floor for the entire world.
Right. And you know, to sort of go back to the regulatory state, if you know, we're talking about it inside, Lee Zeldin, the administrator of the EPA, was here. And he pointed out, there are ores that are manufactured that are mined here in the United States. Because of our regulations, we can't smelt them here because it's bad for the environment. So we put them on a boat.
Tell me no.
And we put them on a boat that's powered by oil. And we ship them to China. And they're manufactured in a facility that's certainly a lot more polluting than any would be in the US. And they're smelted in China. And then they're put in another boat and they're sent back to the United States.
Powered by oil.
Powered by oil again. So what's really best for the environment? That regulation that says that that factory smokestack is cost prohibitive here?
Yeah.
Or having shipping them all the way to China to be smelted in an even dirtier facility,
right,
and then shipping them all the way back here. So we're not even thinking through, even, you know, we're not even thinking through how we do things in a global sense. We're just taking the sugar fix of saying, oh, we've enacted this regulation to clean the air when we really didn't.
Yeah, absolutely not. Let's pivot. Because eventually, Congress is going to pick up the reconciliation bill.
They need to. It's so important.
I believe it is perhaps one of the most important things we can be doing right now. Now, after that, there's a lot of other things we have to contend with. But that is certainly something we have to get our head around. If you were advising, I'm sure you are advising many of our political leaders who will be voting on this, how to prioritize. Because the reality is, if we want everything that we, you know, every little bit of it, that's $10 trillion. They've capped it at $5.8 trillion. So that forces us to have to prioritize. With keeping in mind next year is an election year, how would you go about prioritizing those key provisions, the 20% pass-through, full expensing of capital expenditures, no tips on tax, no tips on overtime, the SALT reduce? Okay. How would you prioritize that? What must we have, the top three things?
So first, let me say thank you for asking that, because, you know, the media is focused on tariffs because they want to scare people. Yet we have this tax bill that's coming up that's oh so important.
Yeah.
And most of the media doesn't ask about it. They don't talk about it. They just want to scare people. But you're right. Right. This reconciliation's coming up, and we really need, the country needs that. So the first thing I would say is, you know, when you saw the Trump tax cuts happen in his first term, it was transformative. Businesses starting investing, you know, all of a sudden they could, you know, invest in their business, and that meant hiring more people and producing more here. And, you know, we cannot let that expire. That has to be priority number one. Let's make those temporary tax cuts permanent. That has to be the first priority. Because if we don't do that, then I do think we're going to start seeing a contraction, because all that benefit that we got, all of a sudden businesses are going to think twice about, can we continue
Absolutely.
To do this, right? And so, you know, I think the second thing is, there's some things that are going to have to be in there in order to get it passed. And I understand that, and the president understands that. And so you need to get it passed and done. And then beyond that, I think there are some promises that the president made, you know, the no tax on tips, you know, that really matters. He's been vocal about it. He's promised it. And honestly, like, the whole, the bureaucracy around, it's not just the tax on tips, but all the rules around what is tips work and what is not tips work. And there's an entire division of the Department of Labor that is spent, you know, enforcing whether someone is a manager and can be part of a tip pool or not a manager.
Wow.
Right.
Okay.
You know, is, you know, does the person that seats people at the table, what percentage of time can that person spend taking dishes from the table?
Really?
Why are we worrying about all that? Just take the taxes off tips and you know, and eliminate you know, you're still going to have a tip rule. You're going to still have to decide who's tipped and who's not tipped, but you're going to get rid of an entire bureaucracy around tracking tips.
I don't think anyone has ever said that, explained that. I don't think anyone knows. I just think we just like, oh yeah, like not, just don't tax it. But you're saying because the government, when the government gets involved, from what I'm hearing from you, it creates a whole department to regulate that thing. Right. And so we have a whole department.
We have a whole department. And so let me just say this. Who gets tips will always be an important question. And that's always going to be a difference between the tipped worker and the non-tipped worker. And we're going to need folks to ensure that it's done the right way. But when you overlay that on top of that with the having to track it so it can be taxed, you know, you're just overlaying rule upon rule. And that just, let's just make it real clear, no tax on it.
So if you were prioritizing, it would be the 20% pass-through, full expensing of capital expenditures, no tax on tips. Anything else that absolutely must be in there to from your perspective?
Look, I think the administration is looking at this. They're looking at it closely. They've got to negotiate it with Congress. Congress is a player in this, and there needs to be some give. I think you wanted to know what the priorities would be. One, make the tax cuts permanent.
Yes.
That has to happen. And then let's follow through on the no tax on tips. That affects the American worker. That affects, you know, the person.
Elections next year, I think.
But it's the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, it affects the hardworking man and woman out there in the service jobs. And it also eliminates an entire bureaucracy in the restaurant that needs to track, you know, those tips so that they can be taxed, right, so they can be reported. Let's just eliminate that.
President Trump said in order to get these different key provisions put in, he will not touch Social Security. But in reality, we know there are only so many really big buckets, right? We're talking about defense, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. And we know we're not touching defense. We're actually adding to it. He said we're not going to touch Social Security. Where is that $1 trillion going to come from, or the money we need to offset this? We have green subsidies. There are green energy subsidies. Right. There seems to be a lot of Republicans not on board with touching that $1 trillion bucket. So where is the money going to come from? Because that reconciliation bill hinges on those offsets.
So it's going to be tough. And this is why, going back to where we started with tariffs and subsidies and all this foreign aid, we need to just stop that. We need to focus on rebuilding our own house. And so if it's foreign aid, is that essential? Is that really necessary? If it's, you know, we're spending a lot of money defending other nations.
Yeah.
Is that essential? Is that necessary? Can other nations now contribute as well?
Right.
You know, at the Labor Department, there are a lot of programs that are run by labor to create job skills. Those job skills really matter, but is government the best person to run those programs? And so we need to really dig deep and make large cuts.
Yeah.
Lee Zeldin was here talking about at the EPA. At the EPA, they've unwound billions and billions in grants, right? And that's going to add up.
I'm thinking about an example you gave over lunch yesterday about a professor, a school being given money to teach welding of some sort. Share that.
I think one of the issues here, and we're seeing this, this is a topic for a different day, but I'll talk about briefly, is folks focus on unemployment. I think what really matters is the labor force participation. Unemployment measures something, but it's not the best measure.
Right.
Unemployment says of those that are looking for a job, how many, you know, of those that want a job, how many can't find one?
Right.
Right. And unemployment's been really good the last few years. You know, even I have to confess, even under Biden, it's been fine. What we've seen,
but most of it's been government.
It's been government, right?
Yes.
Right. What we've seen is a collapse in the labor force participation rate.
Yes,
right?
Let's talk about that. Because under you, when before you left, it was at 63, and 5 years from today, they're expecting it to go from 63 to 60.
That's right.
What is happening?
So the Biden Department of Labor projected that 5 years from today, that by 2030, the labor force participation participation rate, the percent of Americans wanting to work, will be as low as it was during COVID. And that's hard to believe, right? During COVID, it fell below 60%.
Right.
Only 6 out of 10 Americans said, I would like to work, I would like a job.
Right.
And the Biden's own Labor Department projected that it would be back to 6 out of 10.
Why? Like, what
and,
are they?
And this goes to your question about welding. My personal view is, we're doing a disservice. And most of the decline, it's not, you know, the baby boomers are hardworking. They're sticking around, they're working more. But the younger Americans are really dissatisfied with the job options out there. And I think we're doing a disservice to them because we're saying, go to college, go to college, go to college. And they take out all this debt and they might get a degree in liberal arts or they might get a degree in this. And it doesn't lead to a job. And if someone wants to go to college, I'm all for it. But what I think we need to do is trust young Americans to make the choice that's best for them. And so we need to say, Pell Grants, student loans are available not just for college, but if you want to go into welding,
right,
that, by the way, pays more than most government jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to go be an electrician that, by the way, pays more than most college jobs, you can get student loans to get educated in that as well. We made a mistake when we set up the Department of Education. All of a sudden, a college degree became education.
Yes.
And what labor used to do became job training, mm-hmm, right? And now you have education, and that sounds fancy, and then you have job training. You know, and what that meant is now we respect the degree rather than the skill. And along the way, we forgot that the purpose of a job is
to make you useful,
to make you useful, to make you a contributing part of society, but also so you can make money so you can support yourself and your family.
Yes.
And if you're making money to support yourself and your family, there's dignity in that.
Yes.
And if you're an electrician, does it really matter if you don't have a degree from your community college?
Right. If you're able to support your family, buy a home.
That's right. So you know, maybe, you know, I'm hearing music here, so maybe we'll leave it at this on this topic. Yesterday we were talking, and I mentioned that I was at a table with representatives from Texas,
mm-hmm,
and one of them owned a facility, and they needed more welders. And he said, I will start someone out paying $80,000 a year, and I will pay them to get trained, to get educated in welding. You see, even I made the mistake, to get educated in welding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how much I need a welder.
Right.
And there was a president of a community college that said, that is great, we should start a degree in welding.
Yes.
We don't need another college degree in welding. We need someone that's going to teach welding.
Welding, the skills.
Right. And if
with
someone,
the latest.
And if the welder wants to go to the community college then and get their a degree, you know, in history, power to them. But let's give them a loan so that they can learn welding as well as history.
Yes.
So they can support their family.
Because at the end of the day, that is what it should be about, is training our hands to do something useful so that we can go out there and build and not just tear down everything around us.
That's right.
And our society. Alex Acosta, thank you, sir.
This was
fun. I appreciate
thank you.
You. Yes,
thank you. We'll have
was.
To do it again.
I know. You're so smart. I love it. Okay, everyone, thank you so much for listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. I will see you here, same time, same place, next week. Blessings.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.